Welcome to another episode of Let's Chat About It, where we have informal, casual conversations around mental health. My name is Jessica, and thank you for joining this conversation with us.
So hi, everyone. I have Michaela here with me today.
Hi, I'm Michaela. I'm 24. I have just recently been diagnosed with ADHD, and I'm really excited to be on this podcast to talk about it and maybe learn a little bit along the way too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for agreeing to come on this episode. Before we get into ADHD, I was just wondering, how do you practice self-care?
My self-care has changed quite a bit since COVID. With COVID altering a lot of the ability to socialize, that's how I did practice self-care prior. Of course, the regular self-care ways of, you know, face masks, taking care of your body, that kind of thing. Due to the nature of this podcast with ADHD, I do need to go a little bit more of a deep dive into my self-care. So, you know, healthy life choices, making sure I'm eating the right food. I find that if I eat bad foods with carbs, sugary kind of stuff, I feel it. In that case, also working on making sure I have my nutrients. I will take things like magnesium, CoQ10, vitamin D, just stuff to make sure that I have enough nutrients to actually function throughout the day. It's very common for people with ADHD to have deficiencies and that kind of stuff. So it's good to also go to your doctor and figure out if you are naturally deficient. Another way is my sleep. My sleep heavily affects my symptoms of my ADHD. So if I get 8 hours of sleep, make sure it's good quality sleep. I'm unwinding at the end of the day, just things to really calm myself down because I am always go, go, go throughout the day. So just allowing myself time to relax. Going to the gym also is a big thing because that's how you can give yourself some dopamine. And with ADHD, that's something that we're lacking on. Not being avoidant definitely helps. So taking care of my finances, all that adult stuff, that's really scary. When I push it off, that stuff usually comes to bite me back in the butt pretty hard. So actually just saying, okay, I know it's stressful. I know I don't want to deal with it, but if I'm avoidant, then the consequences are going to be 10 times worse. So all of my self-care revolves around practicing my own self-regulation while still being self-learning and accepting state of mind, being self-aware, understanding my brain and the way it works, trying different coping mechanisms, adopting any that might work for me, and then being aware that sometimes as we get older, those coping mechanisms won't work and we have to figure out new ones. So just being aware of how I'm feeling in the moment, being kind to myself all over, I find that a combination of everything will help with my mental state quite a bit. So I am grateful that COVID kind of made me step back and figure out actual coping mechanisms or actual self-care methods.
There's a couple of things I wanted to ask you. I think I already forgot one of them, but maybe it'll come to me as I start talking. But the first one is, I noticed you mentioned when you have more sugary things or things with a lot of carbs, you feel it. What did you mean by that?
When I have sugar, I find you get that energy spike for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And then for an hour, hour and a half after, I'm just tired and my mood is down, my function is down. I don't know how to really explain it other than that's just the way that my body specifically reacts to that kind of stuff. I noticed that my mental health definitely plays into my intestinal health and vice versa. So when I eat bad foods, like sugary foods, my energy goes up and my anxiety starts to go a little bit haywire. And with carbs and foods and gluten, I find after I eat that, I get like my lymph nodes are a little bit swollen and I just feel lethargic. A lot of my ADHD or the symptoms that I get with my ADHD, those symptoms will be worsened when I'm tired, if that makes sense.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah, the way that my body just reacts to it. And it might not be the same way for everybody, but that seems to be a very common experience with people that I know that have ADHD as well. So it's worth it to figure out how your body reacts to certain foods and what you put in it. If it does have a strong effect or not so much, it's just good to know. If I'm going to go eat a sugary food, I know I'm going to feel a little bit like garbage and I'm not going to try to attach it to something else. Like, oh, I'm feeling sad because, you know how your brain works? Like if you're feeling sad, you're trying to come up with a reason. That way I don't overthink my feelings. I just feel like this because of what I just ate.
Okay, that's really good. I'm going to pay more attention to what I eat because unfortunately I love sweet, but yeah, I have to see if there's a connection with anything because there's definitely a link with gut health and mental health, which I think is very interesting just because you'd be surprised the way our body works.
It's all very connected. Yeah, 100%.
I definitely agree. So we're going to move on to talking about what ADHD is. All right, so ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, and it can kind of fall into three general categories. So the first one is the hyperactive type. And with that, the individual kind of feels like they're always on. They have a need for constant movements. They're maybe more fidgety. They squirm a lot. They can talk nonstop, maybe interrupt others without really meaning to, struggle with self-control, different symptoms like that. This is what most people think of when they think of ADHD, but it can also look like the inattentive type. And so with that, there's a difficulty in sustaining attention. So you might find it difficult to follow detailed instructions, organize tasks. You might have a weak working memory. So with that, you could maybe be easily distracted by other stimuli or misplace common things really easily, like your keys or headphones, different things like that. And so with the hyperactive type, this tends to be diagnosed in boys. And then this inattentive type tends to be diagnosed in adults as well as girls. And I'm sorry, that is a really binary stat. And then the third is the combined type. So you see symptoms of both the hyperactive type and the inattentive type as well.
I think that's very accurate from what I've read and from what I've learned. You're very right. I think a lot of the stereotypical ADHD symptoms heavily revolve around that hyperactive type. You know, the class clown, the kid that's always moving, that kind of thing tends to be more kids. Kids just tend to be very hyperactive. And then for inattentive, I think for both of them, you have that same racing thought. Your brain is always on the go. It just depends on how you deal with it. So inattentive, you tend to internalize it. For women, we're told to be more quiet. We're not supposed to be outgoing and very loud and make ourselves seen. So we tend to internalize a lot of that. You know, your brain's always going. So you're not paying attention to what's going on outside. You're daydreaming a lot, that kind of thing. And then hyperactive is, okay, this is how I feel inside and my body's going to mimic all that craziness inside my body, if that makes sense. And then combined is you can experience both of those symptoms. So it can be at the same time. Sometimes, you know, you go through phases where you exhibit more hyperactive traits versus maybe when you're a little bit more tired or reserved, you're going to exhibit inattentive type symptoms.
Yeah, perfect. I really like that point you made about it having the same root, but just manifesting itself differently. That's a really, really good way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think also the whole thing you said about the binary, that's unfortunately a lot of ADHD will heavily relies off the hormones in your body. So if you're assigned female at birth and you go through puberty with the estrogen, a lot of the times that's when assigned female at birth will start to really notice their symptoms of ADHD because that's when the estrogen kicks in. The studies that I've read, don't quote me on this, but from what I've read, the estrogen heavily has an impact on the way that we experience our ADHD. So, you know, even as when you're younger, you can exhibit the hyperactive and then you go through puberty and then you tend to be more inattentive. So it's not only a mix of your hormones, it's also the way that society tells you to be as well. Depends on how you're going to show your ADHD.
Mm-hmm. ADHD is a neurodevelopmental disorder, and it's under the umbrella of neurodivergence, which I just wanted to quickly talk about. With neurodivergence, it acknowledges these different neurodevelopmental conditions rather than being deficits. They're just variations in the brain in comparison to what you would see in individuals who have typical development or functioning in the brain. And so because their brain developed differently during key stages of development, they might have symptoms, behaviors, and traits that we wouldn't see in what we call neurotypical individuals. And so it's estimated about 30 to 40% of the general population is neurodiverse. And this could include conditions like ADHD, but also autism or dyslexia. This is just WebMD. But I really like how it pointed out the different strengths that these conditions have. So they said people with ADHD have high levels of spontaneity, courage, and empathy. They can also hyperfocus on certain tasks. Individuals with autism pay attention to complex details, have good memories, and show certain specialty skills. So that can be a really big asset in certain jobs that require that specialization, like computer programming or music. And then people with dyslexia can perceive certain visual information better than those without the condition. So again, that can be a strength in different areas, such as engineering. and computer graphics. It's really good to highlight, although there are some drawbacks with these conditions, there's also some strengths that you wouldn't find in neurotypical individuals. Was there anything you wanted to add on that?
I definitely agree on highlighting the positive things of neurodivergence. I think a lot of the times it's easy to get sucked up in all the negatives because that's what you predominantly feel, but it's good to remember the positive sides. And I think mirroring your negative sides with the positive flip side, if that makes sense. So for example, when I think of a negative trait, my brain's not going to focus on something if it's not interesting, no matter how hard I try. Mm-hmm. Like if it's not interesting, the words don't get soaked up in my brain.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Exactly, right? But on the flip side, if there's something that you're really interested in, you're going to hyper-focus on it and you're going to do really well in that. So that's where you see people on the autism spectrum disorder do really well with certain things like mathematics, or ADHD will do really good in creativity. So there's always a flip side to the negative aspects just based on how the brain works. With neurodivergent, I think you explained that really well. I actually just learned today that can also include epilepsy. And then there's acquired neurodivergence where it's activated by trauma. So people who have PTSD or complex PTSD, that's also neurodivergence. I just learned that.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of different ways it can manifest itself. I'm surprised the stats said only 30 to 40%, just because I don't know. There's so many different factors that can influence neurodivergence. But yeah, it can be genetics, trauma at birth, infectious disease, immune disorders, nutritional factors, physical trauma, and like you said, PTSD or CPTSD. With that, it can result in changes in the brain, which I think is really cool. The brain never fails to interest me.
It is very interesting, and just the way that specific events can change the way that you think completely, even if you think it's something small, it can really, it's just, the brain is so elastic, and that can be good. Can also harm us, but it is really truly amazing. Once you kind of look into the way that the brain works and the different parts of the brain, it also helps you understand that neurodivergence too. Once you understand this is what this part of the brain does, this is what that part does. And when those are dysfunctioning, that's where you get those symptoms of the neurodivergence.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you were recently diagnosed. When were you diagnosed with ADHD?
I was officially diagnosed by a psychiatrist over the phone in January of this year. The reason that I initially got diagnosed was my mom's trying to get my brother diagnosed. And we were sitting down talking and she was saying all these things about my brother and his difficulty with school and difficulty with social interactions, or just his issues in general, mostly revolving around school. And she had mentioned that ADHD might run in the family and that she struggles with ADHD. And my entire life, I always felt like, you know, when you're running in water and you're like laggy, like you're going so much slower, you're putting in all that effort, but it's just not showing. I've felt that in all areas of my life. I always felt, okay, there's something different about me. Like this just feels a lot harder for me than it seemingly is for my peers and everybody around me. So funny enough, the reason that I actually ended up getting diagnosed was through ADHD memes. Honestly, though, I joined all of these groups because my whole life I hear about ADHD symptoms. I'm like, that doesn't register with me. It's all the hyperactive male dominant symptoms. And I definitely am more of the inattentive type. So I did well in school. I got really good grades, but just the social, emotional aspect for me and everything, let me backtrack a little bit. I feel like I learned how to mask very young. So nobody really saw the ADHD traits in me, but I definitely felt there was something different. So when I see these memes, that would make me think, oh, that's like an ADHD thing. That's not just me being weird. That's an actual thing. And like over and over and over again, every time I see these memes, I'd be like, that's related to ADHD. That's nuts, because that's something I've been dealing with my whole life. You mean there's a cure to this? There's a way that I can cope with it? I talked with my doctor. She referred me to the psychiatrist and talked over the phone. He asked me some questions, why I thought I had ADHD, you know, what my symptoms were, if I had issues in school, if I had issues with social relationships, if anyone in my family had ADHD or symptoms of ADHD. He also asked, at any point in my life, have I ever tried a stimulant from a friend? So like through school. And only once did I ever. I didn't think anything of it, but I ended up writing a 3,000 word essay in 3 hours and did really good after taking that stimulant. And nothing ever clicked in my head that maybe there's something else going on here. I just thought, this is what happens when anybody takes a stimulant in general. I did mention to him, I said, yeah, I had taken one once. It was Dexedrine, and I did really well. And he's like, okay, well, maybe that you do have ADHD. Let's give you a prescription. Try it out for a little bit and we'll see how things go. So I got my prescription of Vyvanse, and I noticed a gigantic difference right away, but it was more like my thoughts are racing all the time, and being on medication gave me the ability to put like a stick in the wheel, I guess, of my thoughts, and just allowed me to sit back and breathe and figure things out. So these things that I've been trying to figure out my entire life in terms of how do I keep this clean? How do I stay organized? Not that the medication gave me those skills, but it gave me the peace and focus enough to actually try to figure out things that work for me. And in no way am I cured by being on the medication. I think the way that you treat ADHD is going to be different for everybody, depending on what you're dysfunctioning in, if it's more emotional, academic, that kind of thing. It depends on what works for you, but I know stimulant is going to work on its own. It's a mixture of being on medication and then actively working on finding new coping mechanisms. Or even in one of your podcasts, you were talking about CBT or DBT. That is very commonly used to treat ADHD. I found that medication just helped me kind of get a hold of a lot of these things that I've been unhealthily coping with my entire life. The only reason I had decided to stop taking the medication, I do actually have a sinus arrhythmia. So when I breathe in, my heart beats faster. When I breathe out, it beats slower. I find being on a stimulant wasn't really good for my anxiety. So I had to take a step back from the medication so I can get my anxiety under control. And now that my anxiety has been more under control, I feel ready to go on the medication again. So by no means is it a cure-all. It's not an evil thing. I think it is really helpful for a lot of people, but you can't just give a kid or an adult with ADHD this medication and expect them to be functioning like a neurotypical person right away. This was the first diagnosis that I felt I fit in with. And I was worried that if I went to psychiatrists and they said, no, you don't have ADHD, then I have to start from square one all over again. What is actually my diagnosis then? If this isn't it, then what is it? And I had mentioned that to my therapist at the time. I said, well, what happens if I don't get this diagnosis? She says that doesn't change the fact that you still experience the symptoms of ADHD. And there are coping mechanisms that I can help you out with these symptoms that you feel. So, like, she confirmed with me that I don't need an official diagnosis to be valid. I don't need medication to function. There's other ways I can go about it to process it. And I just need to understand. I need to stop gaslighting myself. And when you asked me to do this podcast, I was like, am I the right person? What if I don't even have ADHD? Even after being diagnosed, even after taking medication and it works, I know I have ADHD, but that's just, I think, one thing that stops a lot of people, especially women and adults, from getting diagnosed, is I think we live and learn to mask these symptoms for so long and make excuses that when we do get diagnosed and when we do get offered help, I think we might tend to push it away or deny it to a certain degree.
I agree. And especially there's, I think, not the best understanding of ADHD. Like, we're really presented with that idea, with, again, that hyperactive little boy in school, when it can actually look really differently.
Exactly. And that's the statistic of the only 30% of the population are diagnosed with neurodivergence. I feel like that number is most realistically higher. I think a lot of women and adults or people who display the inattentive symptoms tend to not get diagnosed just because of that internalization. A lot of people with ADHD rely on external regulation. And when we're not externalizing those symptoms of your ADHD, there's no one to tell you, hey, like, you're acting a little funny, or you're very, you know, like, pointing out your symptoms of ADHD because they're not visible. And reflecting back, like, one of the things that I think helped me realize too that I have ADHD is a very common comment I get is, my body moves faster than my brain, I think is what it was. So when I work somewhere, they can see me moving from task to task without finishing it. So it's good to be open to other people's perception of you, because sometimes they can really help you figure out some of your own symptoms. And then that can help you be more self-aware of your own symptoms and the way that you are being perceived, because that can help you cope with a lot of these things, help you understand, be self-aware. I think that's the number one thing with any sort of neurodivergence or mental health, is just having people around you that can give you helpful constructive criticism, because that can help you be more aware and self-regulate yourself as well.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I feel like my experience was very similar to yours. Mm-hmm. I've always had a sense that something about me was different, mm-hmm. but I wasn't sure where it was or where it stemmed from. So I was diagnosed also this year, but in October. So it's been a couple of months. We're very new to this. Very, very recent. Again, similar to you, even I still sometimes I'm like, I feel like they made a mistake. I'm not sure about this whole ADHD thing, but it does make sense. Like yourself, I feel like I must have picked up on masking very early in the game. I've also done really well in school. But yeah, there was always that sense that like I could just tell my brain was processing things differently. And I felt it, especially in social situations. I've always felt like there were rules that everyone knew that I didn't know. And I was just trying my best at guessing what these rules are, but I'm not 100% sure if I'm getting it right. Yeah.
It's like everybody else got a manual. And then mm-hmm. we're just kind of left to like figure it out without the manual. And everyone's like, why don't you get it? Like, didn't you get the manual? And we're like, I don't know what you're talking about. What manual? Yeah.
What? There was a script? What? I just chalked it up to social anxiety because that's something that I have. I've always had that sense. I am not seeing this the way other people are seeing this. I guess before I get into it, what were you going to say? Just because I don't want to get too far from your point.
This is another thing that I like suffer horribly with my ADHD. I'm just going to backtrack and think what we were talking about before okay. that.
See, I'm the same way. That's why I was like, let me make sure she says it now before it's gone.
Okay. Yeah, I got to think for a sec. Honestly, it's probably gone. I'll probably remember it like at 4 o'clock today. Yeah, I feel like when you spend your whole life masking, that was with your social anxiety thing. Like 100%, I would go to doctors and they'd be like, oh, it's just anxiety. It's just anxiety. But I'm like, this isn't just anxiety though. This is like, there's something else. Like I would read the symptoms for anxiety and I would say yes, yes to this, yes to this, but no to all this other stuff. My anxiety would more manifest physically first and then mentally, I guess is how I described it for a very long time. I agree with you where it's more the social anxiety that I think comes off of just constantly being worried, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? I don't know how people are supposed to act in the situation. Like, why do I have such a hard time in these things people seem to just easily do day to day without thinking?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think that's why that so commonly gets chalked up to social anxiety. But I do think there's a lot of people maybe undiagnosed or living without knowing what's actually going on.
I mean, there's also high comorbidity. So a lot of people with ADHD will also get diagnosed with anxiety or depression. So there's a lot of, it's the cause of it, but it's also combined.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I think with ADHD, especially with women, a lot of the symptoms can be emotional. Mm-hmm. So have you heard about rejection sensitivity disorder?
Yes, that's on my list. We'll come back to that. we'll come back to that. But what was I going to say? I was like, oh yeah, like when it comes to communicating with people, I feel like I need things to be very clear and direct. Otherwise, I just, I don't know. I just don't get. And it's so weird because I wouldn't describe myself as being bad at reading social cues. It's just sometimes I don't understand it. Like I know there's a social cue present, but mm-hmm. sometimes I'm just not certain which one and I really get in my head about it.
Yeah. I think neurotypical, I don't know if this is just a generalization. I feel that there's a lot of mind games maybe that come with a lot of normal neurotypical social interactions. And
I agree.
And with neurodivergence, you know, you'd rather just be honest. Feelings can get hurt, but it's better to be honest than to, you know, play these games. And it's hard to coexist with people or interact with people, these people that control your job and all these important things, to have to interact mm-hmm. with them all day and try to understand these mind games just to survive. It's just
exactly
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no patience for mind games. I don't think necessarily honesty has to be rude. I think there's a way to be honest and, you know, be nice and gentle about it. I don't know why people are so scared to just be direct. And yeah, I think the people I get along with the best are definitely the ones who also communicate in that similar way, because I feel like I can be more myself rather than having to mask to try to keep up.
Totally. I totally agree with that sentiment. I feel like the people that I've been very good friends with, that I've kept friends for a long time and feel the safest with, ended up getting diagnosed with some version of neurodivergence. There's going to be less confusion, less mind games, and more authenticity.
Mm-hmm. I was telling my friend after I got diagnosed, I was like, girl, I think you should get checked out because you relate with me on too many things. I would not be shocked. I would not be shocked if she had it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, it definitely shows up in the social and emotional realm more. So I don't know, it made me feel validated when you said that, because I always thought it was interesting how that's where I felt it the most. What we realized with the nurse who did my assessment is I had a lot of coping strategies that covered up the other symptoms you may see. And so what happened was I went in for depression and we're just talking and she's like, yeah, I'd like to do an assessment for ADHD. And I was kind of surprised. I was like 80% surprised, because for the past few years, I've been suspecting that there was something underlying the depression, anxiety, because like there's just something kind of what you're saying. Yeah, it meets some criteria, but it's also just a little bit different. So I suspected there was something underneath. I didn't think it was ADHD because the way that I am, like I related to some of the social and emotional aspects, but I am organized. But now I realize it's only because I beat it into my head.
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be something else. Another thing is she knew how I was in school because it was someone who was part of my faculty, because I did do my degree in psychiatry. So she kind of has seen me on that more, I guess, in a different setting. And she's telling me that I was very similar to the other individuals that have come to her to do assessment, just presenting in a similar fashion. So she wanted to go through the assessment with me. And I was just very shocked how many items on the assessment I related to. Like, I remember this one question she asked where she was like, do you feel like you're always forgetting something, even if it's not clear? And I'm like, oh my God, that is me 24/7. I'm always like, what am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting something. I don't know what it is, but there's something there. And so, yeah, it was really nice to, I guess, have a little bit more clarity as to what's happening in my brain. However, I haven't really gotten to the making my life better part. So that's hopefully in the cards. I wanted to ask you, how would you describe living with ADHD?
Like I'd mentioned earlier, living with ADHD, I knew that I didn't fit in. I just didn't know why it was. As you know, I have red hair. So a lot of the times, like throughout my childhood, when I would get bullied for certain things, I'd always just think it was because of my red hair. I didn't think it was anything else.
South Park did, or is it South Park?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't help.
No, not at all. And every time someone brings up South Park, like I just get a little angry. November 21st is Kick a Ginger Day. Always remember that day. Or maybe it's the 22nd. I don't know. I think I tried to forget it, but I remember that day.
That's totally fair.
But yeah, a lot of the things that I feel that ended up being ADHD, even through like my parents or family members, a lot of the stubbornness would be chalked down to be having red hair. There was always another reason that I was acting the way I was. Mm-hmm. When I look back at my childhood, I think what I struggled most with was the emotional sides and the organization side. Turns out my mom most likely will have ADHD as well. And I think a lot of the things I struggled with as a kid was the conflict between me and my mom. That conflict between my mom and I did spark up when I started going through puberty. So that whole estrogen affects your symptoms of ADHD. I totally agree with that. I struggled with keeping my room clean. So that was kind of always a point of contention between my parents and I, very much like a hurricane, like wherever I go, I leave a mess. I still have an issue with that as an adult. I will clean up my entire house and then I'll turn around and it's a mess again. And I just, I don't understand how that happens. Like my brain is so busy that I just do things and don't even notice it. So me living with ADHD definitely has been affected by the executive dysfunction, I think, more than anything. A lot of the conflict in my life within my family revolved around being told to do something and not doing it right away. And that would cause a lot of conflict. As an adult, I've noticed now when I see something that needs to be done, I just have to do it. That's a new coping mechanism that I've come up with. You know, if there's laundry on the floor, just pick it up and do it when you see it. Don't say I'll do it later, because that's not going to happen. And then I'm just going to beat myself up for living in a mess. Like I'm an adult and my house is messy. I think a lot of my symptoms gets heavily coded with the rejection sensitivity dysphoria, because I feel like I'm a burden just having ADHD. You know what I mean? So if I get stuck in my own head, that can definitely worsen my symptoms, I guess. Rejection sensitivity dysphoria has ruled a lot of my life. Pretty much it's just an increased
How would you describe it? It's like an increased
sensitivity.
Well, that's literally the thing. But
an increased sensitivity to criticism or anything negative about yourself. So not only am I feeling bad about not being able to do these things, like keep my room clean, do my homework on time, I'm also feeling the, dang, I'm disappointing everybody. That constant negativity in my brain is so exhausting that I can't actually give myself the energy to go up and do it. I don't know. I always felt different. I didn't understand why. Too busy in my own head to think about other people. So I never really understood why people would kind of pick on me. I think I'm really going off the rails here. I think my ADHD.
No, I don't think there's more I wanted to say about RSV. I think it's normal to feel a type of way after you've been criticized or rejected in a sense. But with this, it's just a bigger reaction than I think what the situation warrants.
Yeah.
It's such a big reaction. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It
takes over everything. It feels, I don't know. There was this point where I feel like I was doing very well mentally. And then I don't remember the exact situation. I think it was just someone that I liked wasn't, I'm gonna sound crazy when I say this, but they just weren't responding in the way that they usually do.
Yeah,
it probably has nothing to do with me if we're being realistic, but I took that so personally. I was like, mm-hmm. They hate me, I'm annoying them, and I felt like I was falling into a depressive episode so bad. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, you literally don't even know what's happening. Like, why are you reacting like this?
It's so intense. I always say, like, I almost picture it as me seeing red. With ADHD, you get intense emotions, and rejection sensitivity dysphoria, I think, is what comes with that. Because when you're happy, like, I'm sure you understand, like, you get really happy and you're very...
really happy.
Yeah.
There was a moment where I'm like, is it bipolar? Like, what is going on with me?
Totally relate. Totally feel that. With the whole thing that you're saying, like, I'm going to be completely candid here. I think it's good to be candid about this kind of stuff because... you know, you can work on your mental health and work on not being toxic. That's a really big thing right now, is looking inward and figuring out your toxic traits. And for the last 5-10 years, like, I've been really trying to make sure that I'm not a bad person. Like, I don't know if I'm hyperfixating on that, but like, I just really want to make sure that I'm crossing my T's and dotting my I's and that I'm being a good person at the end of the day. But when I was in a situation where, same thing, I was just feeling like I wasn't being valued. I was talking and I wasn't getting any response at all. I was getting the silent treatment. Mm-hmm. And I can like fully admit, when I see red, I can say things that I don't mean just because I'm so engulfed in that feeling. So that's what kind of made me want to really figure out what's going on in these moments when I'm feeling such intense emotions, because it can be really embarrassing, the things that can come out of the rejection sensitivity dysphoria. Even if you don't externalize it, just the way that you think, you're like, wow, am I really that far behind that I'm thinking this way? And even if it's not like a real feeling, it's hard to differentiate like real long-lasting feelings versus that flooding, you know, your emotions just take over. You don't really feel like that in the long run. You know that you're worth the time, you know your worth, you know that you're a good person, but those feelings just, they come on so strong and it's hard to feel and think rationally in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue there's still real feelings.
Yeah.
Okay. But your feelings don't dictate who you are as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The reaction doesn't really match the intensity of what happened.
Yeah.
And then it can just be hard to rationalize, because you can internalize all the things that are going wrong in your life is your fault, you know, especially if you're neurodivergent, and it's easy to blame everything else on yourself, I think.
Yeah.
Part, right. Like,
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Did you do the DIVA assessment?
I haven't. What is that?
Okay. That was the assessment the nurse used to diagnose me with ADHD. And I was actually surprised because there was a section on self where the questions were like, are you critical of yourself? Do you have low self-esteem? Are you a perfectionist? Like different aspects like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that was linked to it.
Yeah.
And she was telling me that, yeah, people with ADHD are often really hard on themselves because they aren't really fitting in.
Exactly. I'm really happy to hear that you had a nurse that was so involved in getting you diagnosed. Like, you went for one thing. A lot of the times when you go for something, you will just get diagnosed or assessed for that, and they won't really look into maybe if there's something else, something underlying. So I think that's really great of the nurse that she That's pretty cool.
No, I was super surprised. I was even worried about that because I knew there's something underlying, but I didn't know what. And I was like, oh, is she going to pick up on that? Like, mm-hmm. gonna happen? But it ended up working out. And I think it helped that she knew me as well. But
yeah,
but she's also just a very nice person.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say for myself, because I don't really struggle in the organizational aspect, sometimes I struggle to believe that I have ADHD, but I think the reason I am so organized is because in my family, academics was really, really highlighted. Mm-hmm. I had to force myself to be good at these things. And yep. so, for example, if I don't pay close attention to what I'm doing, I make really careless mistakes. Like something that is just honestly just so dumb. I'm like, how could I even do that? But I don't know, my brain just misses it. And so yeah. the way I've been coping with that, like since I was very young, I just go over all of my work multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I will often misplace things. I force myself to always put things in the same place. But the minute I don't pay that extra attention, it's just, it's gone. Like, I don't know where I put my phone down, even though it was in my hand seconds ago. It's just like, I have to really pay attention. Yeah. And so I don't think I realized over the years just how exhausting all of that is. I always, always have to be on my A game. Otherwise, it's just, it's a mess. I put things down just like in the, I don't know if you do this, just like in the weirdest places. And I'm like, when did I even do this? I don't understand.
I found my keys in my fridge like a couple of times. Like, I don't know how I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I catch myself, like I'll put something down and tell myself I'm going to put it in its proper place later. But I have to stop myself. Be like, no, you're going to forget. Please put this back in the right spot.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of Tile?
No, what's that?
Okay, they have a couple different products. There's one that you can put on your keys. There's a one.
Oh, Tile. I thought you said pile.
No, Tile.
No, I have that because I was losing my keys so much. Like,
oh, that's been I have it. That's been a lifesaver. Like, I have one on my keys. I have one in my wallet, and I even put one on the back of my phone because the amount of times that I lose something is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I need to get one for my debit card. Last time I went to the bank, I asked for a new debit card. They're like, we've given you 12 in the last like 2 years. And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Wow. They didn't have to call you out like that.
I know. I'm like, just be quiet about it next time when I come back for my next one in a month. It's so, I think it's that out of sight, out of mind. Once you put it down, you forget about it. And you're like, you even put something somewhere and you're like, I'll remember where I put this, but you never do.
No, it's a mistake. Yeah, I keep getting those phone cases that are wallet.
Oh, yeah.
That way I just have everything together because I've gotten really good at not losing my phone. So with that, I found that I haven't lost my wallet since I've started doing that, which is good. But I feel like I have a hard time remembering dates, appointments, like stuff like that. So I have a lot of planners, especially when I was in school, I would use Google Calendar and I would also have my own planner. And then I would also have a big calendar on my wall. So I would see it when I wake up and be like, oh, right, I have this, this, and this. And see, this whole time, I just thought, I'm super organized, you know, planning, but I need to have all these things or I won't remember. And I need it to be visual. Like, I like the planner that I can write in, but I also like the calendar. Like you said, out of sight, out of mind. Like, I just made that connection right now.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I probably have that calendar is like, so I can see it and be like, oh, right, I have to do this, this, and this.
Well, that's so smart. When do you think that you started being so organized? Like, when did you make that
connection? As a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I just made that connection while I was getting diagnosed and she was saying these things. I was like, oh my God, that's why I've been doing this whole time. As a kid, I started using my agenda, like the little agendas they give you, like very religiously.
Mm-hmm.
This whole time, I didn't even realize that I was putting in all this extra effort because of ADHD. I just thought that was something I liked. And yeah, that was a weird moment for me because I was like, this is a big part of my personality. And mm-hmm. now I'm realizing it's really just how I've been managing my ADHD. Yeah, no, I have everything written down, got to make to-do lists. I have to have it on paper or just written out somewhere because it just doesn't stay in my brain.
Yeah.
But also I think I get joy from organizing things. Like that gives me a little dopamine. So I love doing it.
Awesome.
This is really bad, but okay. Did you have iTunes growing up?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I would like get my songs off of YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I would look up the Wikipedia information for all of these songs so I can put in the proper name, artist, year, album art, fill out all of that information in iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh and God. I did this for every single.
You're dedicated.
It made me so happy.
Good. If that can give you dopamine, like go ahead and do it. That's awesome. It helps you out too.
Now I look back on it, I'm like, wow, that is a lot of time I invested in something that.
See, that's the thing with ADHD. When you want to focus, you do a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that is so true. You mentioned earlier that you just want to be a better version of yourself. And if you don't know if that's a hyperfixation, I just thought that was super interesting because one of my friends who is, I think now she's a therapist. We haven't chatted in a while, but she was in school getting her master's of counseling. I remember I was asking her something and she was like, I think we should talk about how you always just have this need to be the best version of yourself. I think there's something going on there. And I've never really made that connection until you said that, like, oh, like, is that hyperfixation? Like, I don't know. But yeah, hyperfixations, I don't know if we need to define that, but it's just an intense interest in a task where you just sort of laser focus on one thing and can do it for quite a bit. I don't know if you have a better definition.
I think it's different person to person. Like hyperfixation, I think my hyperfixation is perfectionism. I have hyperfixations in video games or, you know, like there's different fixations that you can have. I think what makes it a hyperfixation, if it always is on your mind, it's something that you heavily revolve your life around, from what I understand and from what I've seen in other people. Yeah, I don't know why I hyperfixate on being the perfect version of myself. I really don't know. I haven't really thought too deep into it. I think it's just being a people pleaser. And if I'm a negative anything around anybody else, I feel like I'm being a burden. You know what? It's probably from growing up with ADHD. If
you're... Yeah.
There you go. You're just so used to being a burden or being too much. That's another thing, just being too much. Feeling like, you know, everything that you have is a negative trait. So why don't I just spend all my energy on making up better traits for myself that will make up for these negative things? Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. It can be healthy because I'm being a good person. But if I'm beating myself up over any mistake I make, how healthy is that?
Yeah. You know?
So
it's all about balance.
And that's hard.
I more so hyper fixate on things. I don't know. That's not a good way to describe it, but I guess I'll give some examples. If there's something I find interesting, I have to know everything about it. For example, when I was like, I still enjoy the game The Sims, but there was a period where I actually like it was bad. I just thought it was an obsession, but now that I realize, I'm like, oh, okay. So what I did, I was, oh my gosh, okay, so I've read every single thing on Wikipedia related about it. So The Sims 1, The Sims 2, just like read every single Wikipedia page on it, scoured all of the forums about it. And you have to understand this game, it has a base game and it has expansion packs. I've literally read everything there is to know about every single one of them and the stuff packs. Like that is so much information I have in my brain that is not going to be of any use to me. I mean, except for my own personal enjoyment, I guess. Whenever I have times where, oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I'm so impressed. There's so many expansion packs.
There's so many. Whenever I'm a little bit more broke than usual, I just think to the fact that I invested so much money in this. I was like, what? 12, 13 years old. So I can't really blame myself, but I was like, wow, that is a lot of money. Cause I have The Sims 2 is my favorite. So I have every expansion pack and I think a couple of stuff packs. But I'm like, that's a lot of money. These games are like $40 each.
Right.
And Oh my God, this is actually super embarrassing, but there was this girl I remember in grade 6 or grade 7, we took the same bus, and she also liked The Sims, so we would talk about it. And this one time, I made a song, and it's just repeating the names of all the expansion packs. And I don't know why she, like, I wasn't bullied growing up, and I don't know how I wasn't, because I was just repeating this over and over again on the bus, like singing it. Like, why was I doing that? And she was just going along with it. I don't get it, but yeah. That's so amazing. That was a really big one for me. Is it amazing or is it?
I think it's amazing. I love it. That's too funny. I feel like I've had a hard time getting hyper fixated on stuff. That's one thing I've noticed. I can't get super into like an artist or into, I don't know, maybe it's because when I was younger, I love my mom, but I really loved Little Mermaid, and she just bought me everything that was Little Mermaid. And I think I was like, okay, never mind. I'm not going to like anything ever again.
Yeah, no, for me, I always find there's like one thing and I'll have a period where it's really intense and then it'll usually fade away. I also tend to do that with traveling. Mm-hmm. If there's a place I want to go to, I really do heavy research into it. And I think that can be normal with going to a new place, but it's to the point where it's like disrupting my sleep, you know? That's what I don't like about it. Like, I'll stay up just like reading about it, going through every single thing. I have three categories of things I hyperfixate in. There's like stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
And like travel. Mm-hmm. And the third is people.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do this, but I have made this connection recently. Like, not all of my crushes, but there are certain crushes that I have that were honestly, they're hyperfixations when you look at them. Just, I have to know everything about that person. And I think it's normal to do a little social media creeping, but it's too much. I do too much. I know too much. If I'm actually speaking to them, like, I'll just keep asking questions because I want to know everything about them and how they see the world. I find that with those people, this is kind of coming back to what I said earlier, but I feel like my RSD is even worse with them. For example, like, I don't know, I feel like I will normally take things pretty bad, but if it comes from them, mm-hmm. I take it even worse.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, if they do something that makes me happy, I am elated, like, euphoric, similar to being on drugs, I must, like, yeah. I don't know. So I'm like, that's a really interesting and something I have to keep an eye out for the future.
It's hard because, like, it's good to ask people about themselves, and like, I think you just seem like very thirsty for knowledge.
Yeah thirsty for knowledge.
Not in a bad way, in any way. Like, your brain is hungry. That's how you get dopamine, is just by learning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can channel that. Like, of course it's, you don't want to totally invest yourself into somebody to the point that it gives you that rejection sensitivity, and, you know, that your mood is kind of based off of however they react to you, I guess. But mm-hmm. I don't know. That's what you're saying in the beginning. Like, you're more likely to meet somebody with ADHD because you're more likely to talk about stuff, like ask about feelings, ask about their likes and their dislikes. I think that's what gives into having a closer connection. If you were talking to somebody who also has ADHD, you probably wouldn't feel weird about, you know, I don't know, that's how you feel. If you feel weird, if you feel that comfort with people with ADHD, like, you can talk about stuff and not feel like you're talking too much. Or I don't know if you feel this at all, but sometimes when someone talks about something, my way of validating them is to give a similar story, or like, I'll be like, oh yeah, I blah, blah, blah. And to anybody else, that's very like, oh, she's making it about herself. But in neurodivergent brains, it's like, hey, I totally understand where you're coming from. You're not alone, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hard because I did do some training in active listening. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things they say not to do. So I try not to do it. But that is definitely, if I do bring it up, it's not because I'm trying to make it about myself. It's because I want to show you you're not alone. Like,
learn about active listening, because I think that's something that's very hard to do when you have ADHD, because you just want to respond. So that'd be good to learn about. Sorry.
That's actually another point I was going to say. I feel like just my personality, I tend to listen more than I talk anyways, like, to begin with. Also, I am nervous about what I'm saying, right? Because I'm like, oh, like, am I talking in the right way? Yeah. And so I think when I am meeting someone, you know, I'm quieter because I don't know what to say normally. I don't know. I don't know how to talk. So I'm just a quieter person, I think. Yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah. Oh, more observant probably, hey?
I hope so.
Yeah.
sometimes I don't know if I'm actually an observant person or if people are just very obvious.
Oh, that's a good point.
Do you think you're good at reading people?
I do, but I also sometimes will gaslight myself or tell myself like, oh, that's just your perception. Like, I'm sure you've heard of empaths.
Yes.
Yeah, for a long time, like, I would call myself an empath, and then I would see, like, how much hate that they get on the internet.
Yeah, I don't say it anymore. Close
to the chest. I don't feel like I'm an empath. I feel like I'm just so, like you said, just so, like, quiet. I'm an inattentive ADHD, so I have more opportunity. Or maybe it's just observing other people so much because you're trying to figure out how do people act. Definitely feel that, especially if they're acting mean towards me. The main thing I try to remember is that there's always underlying emotions. So if they're angry, they're sad. You know what I mean? Like, just understanding emotions in itself. And hurt people will hurt people. So when people say things to me, it's because they're hurting. Mm-hmm. You know, just being like more understanding of, I really don't know why I would be better at reading people, but I find that somebody will say something to me and then I'll say, oh, is this how you feel or do you blah, blah, blah. And they'll be like, yeah, you're right. Actually, I didn't think about that. So I feel like I can, I don't know, understand. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can pick up on it pretty easily. And that's why I called myself an empath for so long, but that's...
Yes. We'll pretend it's not.
No. Yeah.
I was also going to mention that, I don't know if this is something you deal with, but I'm really bad at verbal instructions. I will not remember. I need to have it written so I can like look back a lot of times. My parents will tell me how to get somewhere and I just stop them. I'm like, I have to put in the GPS. Like, I'm not going to remember any of that.
110%. I don't know if it's just because there's so much. I don't know if this is how you feel. I feel like there's always a soundtrack in my head. There's always conversation in my head. So when people are telling me stuff, the messages are going to get crossed. Even just learning stuff. When I was in class, I would write down as my teacher would speak the important thing. So then I'd actually remember. Like, I find I learn best by writing down or by reading.
Same.
I can't hear things and it's not gonna stick. Like, I'll try my hardest to listen, but it's just going in one ear and out the other.
No, I'm the same way. I gotta write it down.
Yeah, 100%. But you know, what you're saying,
go ahead.
Just about how your parents, like, you grew up in a very academically focused house. Like, do you feel that was something you had to do? You had to do well in school?
So I definitely, there was a lot of pressure that I had to do well in school. But also, I was lucky in that I'm a bit of a nerd and I found that stuff interesting. So I found that I was able to sustain attention during school because the things were very interesting to me. I think literally that was kind of my saving grace. If I didn't have that interest, I don't know how well I would have done. But because I like loved it, I would read stuff on my own time because I just found it super, super interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I feel the same way about like biology, anatomy, that kind of stuff. Like, my mom would buy me these big atlas books of like information when I was younger. And I would I would love reading that. And I'm surprised I honestly haven't gone the route of being a doctor. I feel like I would really like going back to school to do something like that. And I may down the road, but with education topics that I would really be interested in, I do so well. I get like 80s, 90s, like wouldn't really even have to study. I would just be in the class and it come naturally to me and it just makes sense in my head. Up until about high school, I think I coasted pretty easily. Like in the math courses, I did really good. Once I hit math 20, I think it was, and physics 20, that's just where I learned, like, if I'm not getting it right away, my brain is just not going to listen. It's like a different language in my ear. And I can't, the one time that I knew 100% that there's something wrong with my brain, when I was in school, there was this one course and it was about different dental materials. So like filling, like really, really boring stuff. I sat and I tried to read a page legitimately, probably for 45 minutes. And I would read it over and over and over again. I tried to write it down, but my brain just wasn't going to sit it out. I think that's something a lot of people don't understand is you can try and try and try. But if your brain is fighting you, like there's no hacks really in that point. Like, you've got to step back and just take a break and find another way to learn that information. But
yeah, that was another thing on my list where I was going to say, I have a really hard time doing things I'm not interested in. Your brain just rejects it. Like, nope, we're not doing that.
There's other stuff that I'd rather be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two more things I was going to mention about living with ADHD. First one being time management. That's definitely an issue for me. Have you heard of time blindness?
Yes, yes. And I heard that it's about the same as like actual deafness or blindness. Like that's about it.
Oh.
That's what I heard, that it's a similar, what would you call that? would that be considered a disability?
Oh,
that's something that I struggle with. And my mom, like, she was always, always, always late. She'd always be late to pick us up.
Same.
I'd be like, oh, I'm never going to be like her. I'm always going to be on time. And now I'm like, how do I do that? I have no idea how to be on time to anything.
You know what? I find for me, it's either or. I'm either early because I'm anxious about being late, yeah, or I'm just super late because I was not doing the time thing well.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
I don't know what it is. Like, I know how long it takes me to get ready. So
right,
it takes me like 30 minutes to get ready, like in the morning for work. But then when I'm going somewhere else, like I can be on time to work, but if I want to go to somewhere else, I'll be like, it only takes me 30 minutes to get ready, but then I'll do my full face makeup and all my hair. And then it's not 30 minutes. It's an hour and 20 minutes. And then I'm 40 minutes late. You know what I mean?
Or sometimes for me, especially lately, just because I've also been dealing with depression, I've been like really tired. So I'll be getting ready and I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to like sit down. And then I just sit down. Like, that's what kind of reason is, okay, no, I shouldn't be judging myself. Things like that.
It's got to be that you're just looking for dopamine, and that the phone is so bad because it's very much very easy dopamine. So it's very easy to just sit down and be like, oh, I'm gonna go on my phone for 5 minutes, and then it's like 3 hours later. Timers are definitely helpful for that. Just when you sit down on your phone, set a 10-minute timer, 20-minute timer, and just listen to the timer. Actually, don't put it on snooze.
Yeah. And that's funny because I think that's actually my friend who I said should maybe look into if they may have ADHD. That's the exact tip they gave me. That's something they do often. But that's funny. Anyways.
I find since being diagnosed, it's helped me a lot with that. Like, not that you should be going around and diagnosing people, but once you know the traits of ADHD, it's that much easier to notice them in other people. Like, even one of my best friends as well, he displays a lot of traits of ADHD, and it has affected him quite heavily. And I have encouraged him to go get diagnosed because I think, for me anyways, getting that diagnosis was very validating. And even though I don't have it all figured out, I think it's provided me that validation and an acceptance of myself, and kind of like that closure almost, that this is what's wrong with me. There's not what's wrong with me, but this is what's going on with me. There's ways to manage it. You know, you can live a happy life. You don't need to live life full of guilt and all those negative emotions that regularly do come with ADHD. So it's just about, like, I just want my friends to have that same self-validation, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I agree. And the last thing I wanted to bring up is ADHD paralysis. Is that something you've ever experienced or felt?
100%. Especially at this point, I am dealing with a bit of seasonal affective disorder. My ADHD, I think, is also being affected by that. My brain is constantly going. There's always something going on in my head. And a lot of the time that's so exhausting that I just sit on the couch and I will stare at the wall for a little bit just because it's so overwhelming. That's one aspect of paralysis, but another one is definitely just the decision paralysis. Like, there's just so many, the executive dysfunction. When you are wanting to do something, there's not only that, okay, I need to get up and do it, then the guilt that comes with it, and then the constant, like, okay, time to get up and do it. That's just overwhelming in itself, and then I won't get up and do it, and then I'll feel more guilty. So that kind of causes the paralysis in itself. It's just, it snowballs if you don't catch on it, and then it's very easy to just sit and be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. I have this little workout mat beside my bed, and that's where I'll be on the floor just like staring at the ceiling like, oh, I need to do this.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Sometimes you should just sit and let your brain and your body catch up.
Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, it can also sometimes be a little overwhelming, just have that sense that I need to get these things done. Mm-hmm. And the way I like to describe it is, it's a little bit nerdy, but with chemical reactions, you always need to overcome activation energy in order for that reaction to proceed. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what it feels like in the brain, right? That pump of activation energy is a little bit higher in folks with ADHD than in neurotypical individuals. Just have this really big mental block before you can do things. And it just kind of sucks. I would say that sucks. But I also, you do have a good point where sometimes you do just need to take a break. And
I think it's very hard forcing yourself to adhere to neurotypical practices. Like, we live in a neurotypical world. And mm-hmm. I think if we allowed more space for neurodivergent people to, you know, take advantage of the hyper-focus moments when we're feeling more energetic and feeling like we can focus, to do it at that point. And then, you know, when we're feeling not necessarily energetic or like we can't do anything, to, you know, take a break from work and go for a walk, or just, you know, like make more accommodations in the places that tend to be the most stressful for people with ADHD. I just don't think it's very realistic. Now that I understand more how the brain works with ADHD, it just doesn't really seem to make sense to force us to fit in a neurotypical world, I guess. People go to work for 8 hours a day without a break and come home and switch off work and be in their happy social life. I think I have a very hard time with that.
I need an hour or two to decompress after work.
Yeah, I'm masking all day. You have to switch back into your normal personality again.
Yeah. And so just very quickly, we kind of mentioned it in describing how it's like living with ADHD, but I would say the ways it affects mental health specifically is definitely having that sense of shame and guilt. I feel like dealing with that constantly isn't good for you.
Yeah. 100%. It's just, it's exhausting. It's distracting from your ability to just function.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree.
Just in general, that fatigue that comes with not only the shame and guilt, but that masking and, you know, having to do these extra strategies in order to, what you were saying before, function in this, you know, typical world. It's really tiring. It takes energy out of you. That's hard.
A lot of extra steps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's where it ties on, like just taking care of your mental health in general. Like, even if you're not diagnosed with ADHD, if you're still experiencing symptoms of depression or anxiety, a lot of the things is it just makes you want to sit and do nothing. Depression makes you kind of want to not do things that make you happy. And I think a lot of regulation comes from doing things that make you happy. So when you take care of your depression, it will help your ADHD. If you have anxiety, you know, when you're always on the go, always on the go, that can be also very exhausting. You do have comorbidities, taking care of those as well, not just focusing on one thing at a time. I think it all goes down to that self-regulation, self-awareness, and it's good to have people around you that are looking out for you. So, you know, if you are starting to show signs of depression that you don't notice yourself yet, they can be like, hey, are you okay? You're seeming a little down. And then that will kind of give you a chance to focus on what you need to focus on. Like for me, I have plants in the house. If I didn't have plants that would start dying when I stop watering them because I'm depressed or distracted, I wouldn't know that I'm not doing okay, if that makes sense. Plants starting to droop, then that's my sign to, you know, I got to take care of myself.
Oh, cool. See, I've been scared to have plants because I just don't think I would be able to take care of myself. And that's interesting. It's like an indicator for you. Mm-hmm.
Definitely have killed a lot plants in the process, but I think it's a step down from having a pet. I don't think I have the time or energy right now to deal with the pet. So a plant is just something to take care of other than me, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's totally fair. And I guess just moving on to our final section here, what are some tools or tips you find useful for navigating life with ADHD? I know we've kind of mentioned it briefly throughout the episode, but if there's anything you think you haven't mentioned.
I think end of the day, you have to be kind and patient with yourself. If you have ADHD, it's very easy, like rejection sensitivity dysphoria, very easy to get sucked up into that. It's very easy to start talking negatively, because I don't know if you're aware of the first voice and the second voice, like in terms of thought processes.
No, I don't actually want to explain.
Let's say something happens. Your first initial response is kind of the way that you've been conditioned to think. So, you know, let's say you make a mistake, you're going to say, oh, that was stupid. You're so stupid. Like, you can't get anything right. That's pretty much the way that you've been conditioned to think, either by the people you were raised, your friends, your family, or society. It's an emotional reaction. And with any sort of mental health, there's a second voice you should be training. The second voice that you train is your healthy voice. That's the, okay, no, I'm not stupid. I just made a little mistake. It happens. What can I do to fix the situation? So it's more of that reasoning, logic, like training that second thought, or that second voice in your head, really does help a lot with managing life in general. It works well for people who are neurotypical as well, because everybody has that first voice, that criticizing, mean voice, like everybody has that. And if we listen to that voice all the time, that voice is going to be much louder than that second voice, or might not even have that second voice at all. So just being mindful of the thoughts that come in your head, recognizing them as, maybe these aren't my thoughts. This isn't how I really feel. how do I actually feel about it? Step back and try to train that second thought. I think that's been super helpful for me. It helps with my humor. I make a lot of self-deprecating jokes and it's how I cope with things. But I think that's how I manage to keep things positive when I may be starting to feel a little bit negative about myself. I'll make a joke about it. And that tends to be that second voice. You know what I mean? Like, and my second voice is very humorous. Like, I try to bring positivity to the situation. Like, that's me. I'm not a negative person to my core. I very much am funny and I like to have a good time and, you know, see as much positive in the situation as I can. So that's just one of the things, just being kind and patient to yourself. Having that desire to understand your ADHD will also help. I really recommend that for anyone who's a parent of someone who has ADHD, is the way that you raise neurotypical kids is not the way that you raise neurodivergent kids. They're going to need a lot more positive reinforcement rather than negative reinforcement as to avoid sparking that RSD. When I was younger, I had a really hard time brushing my hair. I had curly hair. I was the only curly hair kid in the family. So my mom didn't want to touch my hair. She gave me a month calendar. And if I brushed my hair once every day in that month, day after day, so I didn't miss anything, she would reward me after a month of brushing my hair with going to the local water park or, you know, going something that would be a reward for me for doing something good for a month. And I've carried that through to my adulthood. So I'm really grateful that my mom did find quite a few coping mechanisms to help me out with that stuff and that I've carried through to my adulthood. And that still works pretty well. Mm-hmm. And just being aware of the science of it, like even learning the different parts of the brain that dysfunction when you have ADHD, for example, your
frontal lobe.
That's one of them. There was another one that was your reticular activating system, I want to say. So frontal cortex is your attention, your executive function, organization. Limbic system is your emotions and your impulse. Basal ganglia is the way that your brain will communicate within itself, so controlling your attention and your impulsivity. And then the reticular activating system is the communication between the body and the brain. So kind of like the bodyguard or the bouncer, it'll decide what info makes it into the brain. That's what allows people to focus in these really loud and busy environments. Anybody who might have ADHD will understand that that part's not functioning properly. Like you have a hard time gauging what you should pay attention to, whereas other people that just comes naturally. Once you understand what's commonly dysfunctioning in the brain with ADHD, it's easier to be more accepting of yourself and maybe people that you have in your life that have ADHD, having kind of a better understanding of it in itself. And therapy, capital T therapy, I think.
Yes.
That's always something I always say to everybody, even if you think you're, you know, functioning perfectly, there's a lot of stuff that goes unnoticed. And it's very validating to be in therapy because a lot of the times when you share your thoughts with other people, their own emotions are coded in their response. So having somebody who's non-biased and not affected by your ADHD or whatever you have to help validate your thoughts and help you come up with new coping mechanisms. That's the biggest thing with ADHD is we do adopt a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms. And it's good to learn how that's harming you and then learn new positive coping mechanisms. Yeah, training that second voice, doing things as if you think of it. If you see it, deal with it. Otherwise, it's out of sight, out of mind. And pair boring tasks with something that gives you dopamine, because that's what's dysfunctioning in the ADHD brain, is that reward. Someone who's neurotypical will do a chore and they get that dopamine, but that doesn't happen with someone with ADHD, unless it's you for yourself, you found joy in organizing things. So that's where you get your dopamine.
I find that I tend to listen to music as I do things. Mm-hmm. I love music. And so especially when I'm cleaning, I have to have some music on. And again, these are things I thought were just my personality, but ways I've been coping without realizing it.
It's very eye-opening when you get diagnosed and you look into it a little bit more. Very common for people with ADHD to listen to podcasts when they're working. Like that's one thing my brother says. He's like, I can't work unless I'm listening to a podcast. Like it's just something to help you focus. That's my coping mechanism so far. I'm sure there's lots more that I can learn. And I think you've encouraged me to be a little bit more excited about organizing.
Yay. I love color coding things. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, if you're a visual person, adding colors to these things would definitely make you a little bit more excited.
That's good to know. See, this is another good thing, is just talking with other people, finding your community and trying to figure out how to make things work easier, because everybody has different different things that work well. And I might have to pick your brain on some organization.
Yeah. The only reason I am good about paying my bills on time is because I get to enter it into my spreadsheet, and that makes me happy. My spreadsheet's color-coded.
I'm impressed.
Thank you. I was just going to add, I feel like I don't have the best tips for navigating ADHD because it's very specific to me. I know some people struggle with using planners to keep their thoughts organized. But yeah, for me, it's really just writing things down because I know it won't always stick in my brain. Mm-hmm. And to try to build a routine as to, for example, where I put things and when I write things down and when I look at these things. And something I really liked what you said about the first voice and second voice. That's something I've kind of adopted without realizing it. For example, when I'm experiencing the ADHD paralysis, before I'd really beat myself up about it. But now I'm like, you know what? This is one of the symptoms you experience of ADHD. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not your fault. Let's just write it out. So it kind of helps almost distance it from yourself. Yeah. Another thing I do, sometimes I just lie to myself. And I mean that in the way where, let's say I have to write a paper and I'm having a really hard time starting the paper. I'll tell myself, okay, you know what? All you have to do is write the outline and that's it.
Yeah.
And so I'll get started on the outline. And I find sometimes like once you get started, it's easier to keep going. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll say these little lies to myself. Like for example, you just have to do A and you can go back to bed.
Yeah.
Then once I start doing A, I'm ready to do B, C, and D. So just little lies. I don't know if they're actually lies, but just little things like that to kind of help myself get started.
That's so funny that you say that because now I realize that I definitely do the same thing with the gym. Like if I don't want to go to the gym, I'll be like, okay, I'll just go on the treadmill and I'll run for 5 minutes. And then I'm usually at the gym for like an hour. So that's so smart. I didn't even think about, you just have to break it down step by step and then it's not this big daunting thing.
Yeah, exactly. Even doing that in general, I would do this a lot in school where I would just break things into sizable chunks. That way it's a little less intimidating and you're able to get started.
That's really smart. That just quickly. Thank you.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. So it's really, it's still kind of new to me. I would love to learn some more. This is my own research I'll have to do later on, just how to manage that sort of social and emotional. Yeah. I will say one thing, actually, something I started to do, because again, for me, I write everything down. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to people, sometimes I think I'm not great at discerning things, or someone will do something and I'll feel weird about it, but then I'll forget about it.
Yeah.
So now I've been like, once a red flag pops up, I've been writing it down. And then if I find that I'm writing a lot, I kind of reevaluate how I want to proceed in the situation. And I think that's been really helpful for me because I've been in situations a lot more shorter than before. Like I'm able to kind of get out before it gets really bad. I started this with dating, but I've actually been doing it all my like interpersonal relationships. Yeah. So with friendships as well, just because, yeah, kind of that out of sight, out of mind you were mentioning before, like I forget things really easily. It's bad.
Yeah, that's really smart. I'm going to steal that from you too, because I feel like I definitely will shrug off, I think, some very not healthy behaviors, either because I will simply forget about it, or, well, I have all this baggage, so I have to put up with this person's baggage when it's not baggage. It's, you know, it's just, I think that's a good idea, actually, to write that down and then, good idea.
Or sometimes you're just like, oh, maybe this is how people are because you don't, you know, you're like, normal people do. I don't know. Right? Sometimes it's like maybe normal people who aren't nice.
Yeah, especially with dating, what you're saying earlier, well, people will say one thing, like the social cues. There's a lot of social cues in dating that are very hard to navigate.
I agree. So I don't really like dating. But that's another episode. That's another
few tongue talk. I'll be on that one because I feel it.
All right. So just some final takeaways here. Is there anything that you want people who aren't aware or don't have ADHD to take away from this episode?
If ADHD or really anything doesn't make sense to you, if your initial reactions are negative, I highly recommend at least looking into it if your first or initial reaction is to be, oh, they're just being lazy, or they're just, you know, all these common misconceptions will be easily squashed as soon as you look into a little bit, and it can help you be more accepting and understanding of people with a neurodivergence, not on purpose. Trust me, anything that you're probably thinking about us, we're already beating up ourselves for in our head. People who think that they have ADHD but are scared to or think that they might not, it doesn't hurt to at least get diagnosed. And like my therapist said, if you identify with some of these symptoms, you can always talk with a therapist to get coping mechanisms. It doesn't need to be validated with a diagnosis or with medication or anything like that. If you feel them, it's valid, and you can feel a lot more control in your life and your emotions if you immerse yourself in the ADHD community. So for example, if you're thinking that you might have ADHD, but you're not too sure, join a couple Facebook groups or support groups, and then you can get a perspective to see, okay, I maybe don't fit in here. I don't think I really fully agree with what the people are saying here, or okay, I identify with what these people are saying. And then you can participate in the community and the discussion and, you know, at least have support and pick up healthy coping mechanisms in these groups. Just educate yourself. That's, I think, what's been the most helpful for me, is just really trying to understand what ADHD is, how it affects me, and listening to other people's coping mechanisms on what works for them. Test it out. If it doesn't work, then just keep looking and don't give up. Don't beat yourself up for not getting things right away. And ultimately, be kind to yourself and train that second voice to be more loving to yourself and accepting, and taking care of yourself is the biggest thing. If you avoid it, then it's not going to go away. It's just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really something anyone can take away. Be more loving to yourself and face these problems head on, whatever they may be.
Exactly. I think that's a healthier way to live. You want to enjoy life to the fullest. And if you're avoiding it, you're not going to get your full human experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on to this episode. I really appreciate all of the wisdom and personal experience that you brought in.
Thank you for having me. It's been really informative, actually. And I've learned quite a few things about myself and about ADHD in general. So I really appreciate you asking me.
Well, that's it for this time. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at LCAI Podcast, or you can touch base with us via email at lcaipodcast@gmail.com. I'm happy to address any questions, comments, or concerns. Otherwise, please take care, and I wish you all the best.